Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255.
And just like that, it's the last weekend of summer.
Oh, stop it. I want to hear that.
Well, on the calendar, I think we got another 3 months of great weather, right, guys?
I don't know about 3 months, but I'll settle for 6 weeks.
Yeah. I did hear that we're getting an early winter, though.
Really?
Yeah,
I heard a warm fall, winter. So I like my prediction better.
Because there's only two more winters till the next election. All right.
It's a big one. Monday's going to be a big one. I mean, it's going to be a big one for what we do and what we talk about, which is the housing. You know, every party's got their own agenda out there, and hopefully the promises that they make, they'll actually fulfill, and they'll fulfill them now and not 3.5 years later, just before the election. So hopefully the 30-year amortization would be nice. The extra savings account for young Canadians to be able to put money in tax-free and take the money out, that would be nice. There's a number of them out there. Again, the one that worries me the most, and I know we had one of our listeners chime in and email me this week and just say, boy, I mean, the Liberal one, where taxing your property, capital gains tax, if you sell your owner-occupied property, that's a scary one. And, you know, they can, again, I mean,
they swear they're not going to do that, though.
He swears, but then there's an MP that went on, did a video saying that for sure they're going to tax. So I don't know what to believe anymore. And as a voter, it's hard to determine which one is true and which one isn't true anymore. So
those are the only two bad ones in the Liberal platform, is that taxation and the blind bidding, right, guys?
I think
so. Yeah, the blind bidding is going to piss off real estate agents and vendors. I mean, it should upset vendors as well, right, Paul?
I think so, too. I think the vendors will probably be leaving a lot of money on the table. I hope they don't bring that in, but they say they will. And, of course, the taxation of the principal property is that's concerning as well. Very concerning.
So, yeah, they're worried about flippers, right?
Well, that's it. Yeah, they're talking about taxation if you sell your home within the first year.
Right.
My problem with that is how many people move into a home and realize it's just not the home for them, or how many people move into a home and realize that maybe they don't love their partner anymore and they separate. And so how do you say what's a flip and what's not a flip? Like, go in and do some renovations and then sell it? That's a flip.
But I don't understand the problem
with that, though. What's wrong with that? We live in a country where, you know what, if you're good at something and you want to buy a house and spend 6 months and renovate it and put your hard-earned money into renovating the property, what's wrong with making a buck or two and living in it in that time frame? There's nothing wrong with that. Why are we telling people they shouldn't be doing that? That's absolutely wrong. There's already enough tax money that's being generated by the fact that you're buying materials to renovate the house, tax revenue. Chances are your house is going to be, again, reassessed, and therefore your property taxes are going to go up. Like, every single level of government is making money by this happening, and yet we're telling people not to do it. It doesn't make any sense.
Frank, I 100% agree with you. I mean, you know, we've had a chat about even the major banks telling you can only own so many doors, but which is ridiculous. Now the government's telling us that we can't make money on a flip, which is ridiculous. I make lots of money on flips, and I know lots of people that's their income. That's how they live. They flip properties. And listen, you're renovating an ugly home, and you're making it you're increasing the curb appeal. You're making it better for the neighborhood. Everyone's benefiting from it. I don't know why there's a problem there. I 100% agree with you, Frank.
Creating jobs. That's the other part of this all. You're creating jobs. You've got people coming in and renovating your home for you. It's creating jobs. It's exactly the world we want to live in. We want people to work. We want taxes to be, tax revenue to be there. Everything is absolutely correct on this, and yet they want to tax it. It makes no sense.
Well, plus you're taking a dog property and renovating it, making it a nice property, improving the neighborhood.
What's wrong with that?
Absolutely. That's what I just said. Like, you're making the neighborhood better by improving the quality of the property. Absolutely.
So how are they going to figure out if it's your principal residence or not in the first 12 months?
Who knows? I mean, right now, for the last few years, even if you sell the house that you live in, you have to report it on your tax return. Right now, it's not being taxed, but it's certainly the government, again, big brother looking down and trying to figure out everything that you do. And I think that, there's an element of privacy that I think we all still want, even though it's very hard to come by, because all you have to do is talk about something, and next time you look on your phone, I mean, it hears you, and all of a sudden those ads start popping up about what you talked about, which is crazy. So,
yeah, I don't know. No, I agree with you, Frank. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And how do you determine what is a flip and what's not a flip? How do you determine, you know, someone sells within a year? Did they flip it? Did they not flip it? It's
well, like you said, what if it's just personal problems that happen within that first year?
Of course.
Or you get transferred.
Yeah, of course. Anything like that can happen. And so now you're paying tax on that? That's ridiculous.
Looks like they're coming down hard on money laundering too. Is that a really big problem?
The money laundering policy changed a number of years ago, and it drives us nuts because, logical transactions are being, you know, really looked at so closely, and they're just common sense, logical. You know, it says clearly in there, transfer from another account. Well, now the lender wants history on the other account. So it's just too much. And for us, I mean, we always say, why do we have to be looking for this? If the money's already gotten into the bank account, it's that bank's responsibility to make sure that it's not laundered money. Why are we having to police it? Like, it's not for us. You know, it just...
Well, shouldn't they just make it that you report a purchase on your income tax? Wouldn't that do it?
What do you mean, a purchase of a house?
Yeah, if you buy a house, you just, on your income tax, you say, yeah, I bought a house.
I think it'll automatically say that when you do your tax return and you say whether you own or rent.
So what's the problem? What's the problem then?
Well, it's not the problem. The problem is that the government's got the lenders absolutely grilling and grilling and grilling when it comes to down payments. So any deposit that's in your bank account that, you know, most banks have anywhere between a $1,500 and $2,000 limit that doesn't say payroll on it. They want information as to where that money came from. And if you sell a car, and if you privately sell a car, last I checked, nobody does bill of sales. I mean, nobody does that. I mean, a private person, you sell some furniture,
yeah,
and all of a sudden you have to explain that you did that. And then you got to wait for the lender to either accept it or deny it and then say, no, we need to see something else. And it's just stuff that's not necessary. And honestly, I mean, money laundering probably represents less than 0.5% of people that do it in this country. And yet the other 99.95% of people have to prove where their money came from, even though it's from legal sources and maybe an investment or maybe a TFSA. And you have to show all the history on it.
How much more of an invasion of privacy is it now compared to, say, 5-10 years ago?
It's pretty big. I mean, you have to say everything. And I'll give you an example. Just this week alone, we got one of the lenders that said, hey, this kid is 28 years old. How did they save $117,000? Like, that's the kind of questions we get. And, you know, it's uncomfortable for us to ask. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Paul.
You know what's funny is I have my dog here and my girlfriend's dog here, and I'm waiting for someone to come near my door and my dog go crazy as well.
Well, that's exactly what's happened here. There's a dog walking across the street and they're all going nuts right now. And I've got two of them in my house today.
So. Where's Kathy? Where's Kathy when you need her?
She's the one that just came home, actually, so that's why they're barking.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You know what? The world, it's funny because with the world on Zoom now, there's so many things like this happening. You know, kids in the background, people making lunches and dinners. It's just hilarious.
People peeing.
Yeah. Yeah. But I could tell that Frank was losing his train of thought because his dog was barking.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, Frank, at what point does it become none of the bank's business where you got your money from?
It's never. If they're lending you money and they're under obligation to make notes on, you know, somebody that's got excess money that maybe it's outside the box, they need to make notes and show that they've asked the question of where a 28-year-old came up with $117,000 for a down payment. So, that's all part and parcel. And listen, I mean, it's an uncomfortable position for us to be in because why do I have to ask that person how they save the money? It shouldn't be any of my business. But, you know, I say to the clients all the time, listen, the lender's lending you $600,000. If you want the $600,000, they're asking the question. Unfortunately, we have to answer it. I can fight it a little bit for you, but they may come back and say, hey, if the customer doesn't want to tell me, go somewhere else. And maybe the next lender will do the same thing. Maybe they won't.
Paul, was it tough on you at 25 when you made your first million?
Oh, Steve, come on. I was 24.
I always like to get my shots in.
I know. You both do. I know.
521 Talk, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Paul Rushforth and Frank Napolitano. Paul, in your vast real estate experience, how long after an election does the market usually pick up again?
Well, first of all, it depends on who gets in, right? If there's any major changes, it could be a couple weeks. But I predict that, I mean, we're slow right now. I'm not going to lie to you. We're really slow. Our listings picked up this week. Like we had a good large increase in the number of listings hitting the market. We had a large drop in our sold prices or in our sold properties though. And we had a drop in our average sale price too. So there's more inventory hitting the market. We're still under 2,000 homes, but it just feels really, really flat. And I think it's a combination of kids going back to school. We have the staggered system where we have the French go back 1 week and the English go back the next week. Then we have an election and there's so much uncertainty and we've gone through a crazy time that the market
fourth
wave. Like the market just really, it's funny. It was one day. It was like, whoa, I think I felt a slowdown. Next day is like, wow, where's the market gone? And it just went from insane market to quiet market. Like there was no cooling off. It was just cold.
But is it that slow, Paul, compared to most Septembers, or is it slow compared to how crazy it was?
I think it's going to be slow compared to most Septembers. I think when the numbers come in, I think we're obviously going to see probably the average sale price increase over September of last year. But when you look at the actual average sale price in the last 2 months, it's gone down $9,000 after going up $117,000 in the first 3 months. So we've really seen our numbers start to tail off a little bit. Homes are sitting on the market more. We're not getting the multiple offers. A lot more conditionally sold properties. Our months of inventory is increasing. We're slowly sliding towards a little bit more of a balanced market. We're not there yet, but we're on our way towards more of a balanced market, which is not a bad thing. It's healthy for buyers, healthy for sellers. And I'm not saying if you're someone who's looking to sell your property, and I'm not saying don't put your house on the market because you're still in a very, very strong market. Yeah. It's just we're not seeing the crazy push like we saw in the first 3 and 4 months of the year. I know people who sold their house in those periods are very, very happy and thanking their lucky stars because it's just a little bit more of a normal market now. But it's funny because we went through that craziness. Now we're in this normal market, which actually feels really slow because we're not used to this normal market anymore. But it's a normal market. I mean, this is what this is where realtors would need to really sharpen their skills and help the consumers out because it takes a lot to sell a home right now. It's not that easy anymore. It's not like just sticking on the market and it's going to sell. It's now we have to do our homework. We have to make sure our marketing plan's in place. Make sure we're doing everything we have to do to get homes sold. And I don't know. It's kind of refreshing. I like the challenge and the hard work, to be honest with you.
It's amazing how quickly our expectations change and how quickly we get spoiled, though, right? When it went up over 100,000, we just thought it would never end. Like sellers were thinking, well, I'm going to wait because it's going to get even better. Meantime, a year and a half ago, we had no idea this was even coming.
Well, if you want to know the honest truth, I thought we were going to go to the end of the year this year. I thought our market was going to go really, really crazy till the end of this year. We actually stopped a little bit sooner than I thought we would, which once again is not necessarily a bad thing because the average sale price has climbed so much. It's hard for first-time homebuyers to even get in this market. But I know I sort of went on a tangent. To answer your question, Steve, what's going to happen after the election? I do think it depends on who gets in. And regardless, I think we'll probably see maybe a little bit of a rebound of maybe even a week to 2 weeks after the election where we'll see our market potentially pick up a little bit. But once again, we've never gone through this going into a fourth wave, right? So we're going to kids going back to school, election, and a fourth wave. So it's hard to say what's going to happen. Anyone who says they can predict what's going to happen is wrong. But I hope that we see our market start to pick up a little bit as we get out of this election.
It's quite possible that mid-late fall, we could be crazy again.
It's quite possible. I don't see it, but I don't see what happened before because we are starting to see homes hit the market. So, we're not quite as listing starved. Buyers have more opportunities, more choices. It's interesting. I monitor all our feedback on all our properties, and there's a lot of feedback now that's saying, well, really like the house. We're going to check out a few more, and we'll get back to you in a few days. Where in the old market, if you were jumping to that property today, you were done. So, and I would say, maybe 35% of our feedback is coming back with nice property. We'll keep it in mind. We're going to look at a few more. And I'm like, what? Our market's really changed. Because if you would have told me that 4 months ago, I would have said, yeah, no chance.
Yeah, you're never going to get it. Exactly.
Never going to get it. No.
I've never seen changes like this in such a short period of time, though. A from the craziness, and now right back to what would be normal for this time of year.
And it happened, like, there was a lot of realtors, including ourselves, that caught themselves in a bit of a jam because our message to consumers was buy first, buy first, buy first. You have to buy first. And the market shifted so quick that the advice we gave to some of our sellers and our buyers, including probably what a lot of realtors did, was to buy first. And then the market shifted overnight and we struggled to sell their property because, you know, in Jan, Feb, March, and April, we were like, don't even worry about your house. It's selling.
Yeah.
Let's go find a house first. And then we had people who went and found a house and then their house was a struggle to sell. We ended up getting them sold, but it was a struggle and it was stressful. And it wasn't that we were giving the wrong advice. It was just, we gave the right advice. It's just the market just shifted so quick. And like it happened within days, it just shifted to a quiet market. And there was a lot of sellers that were caught holding their property. And I've said this before, I've done more guarantees in the past 3 weeks than I've ever done. Like it's just people who are stuck with their property and I had to guarantee, I've guaranteed quite a few properties over the last little bit.
So we're at sell first now?
Well, we're at a bit of I wouldn't say
the neighborhood. No, Paul, it depends which neighborhood you're looking in.
Yeah. I wouldn't say we're sell first right now. I would say we're potentially still buy first, but be realistic with your pricing of your current home. Like, don't think you're getting a home run. You know, if you go to your mortgage broker, you go talk to Frank and he says, what's the value of your home? And you think it's worth way up here, get a realistic number and work from a conservative number and say, you know, at worst case scenario, I think it's around here. So
it's always nicer for the numbers, eh, Frank, if you can sell first. You know exactly where you stand then, right?
Makes it easy. You know exactly where you are, how much equity you've got, how much of a down payment you have in your next home. There's no question. But again, if you take a conservative approach to it, you know, for me, I mean, usually when I sit with clients, I mean, I'll say, what do you think your house is worth? Or have you met with your realtor? And has your realtor told you what you're going to list for? And then generally, I'll take a few percentage points off. So let's say you sell for this amount. Here's what the real estate commissions are. Here's what the HST on real estate. So this is what your, and let's round that down a little bit so that, you know, we've got a lot of playroom and I'll do the same thing on expenses with clients. I mean, here's what your property tax adjustment will likely be. Here's what your land transfer tax will be for sure based on your circumstances. So here's what the legal fees are so that there's always a little buffer there because if you leave yourself too tight, you put yourself in a position where at the last minute, you're having to scramble to get money, and sometimes it's not that easy.
Yeah, and if the Liberals get in, you can't sell in that first year.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't know if they enforce that. I think it's bad judgment on their part. I think they will upset a lot of potential voters down the road. There's other ways to get tax revenue, and I think you want to encourage. Like I said before, I think you want to encourage people to find houses that aren't in great shape and renovate them and fix them. I think you generate more jobs and you generate way more tax revenue on both sides, both at municipal jobs, provincial tax, federal tax. I think it's a win-win all the way across the board. So I don't know why you'd want to do that.
I guess flipping is a local thing, eh, Paul? There's not that many flips in Ottawa, are there?
Well, with the prices the way they are, it's a struggle right now with any flip, you know, especially with what we've seen, how the market's gone. But no, flips were really, really popular in the States when they were going through their crash. And there was a lot of people who were walking away from their homes and people were picking up homes for nothing. But no, it's tough to find a flip. It's really tough to find a flip.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. All right, Frank, let's talk amortization. I think the NDP is the only one that's come out, right, with a proposal for a 30-year am?
With the 30, yes. They're the only ones that put it as part of their platform. But again, we're confident. Like I said, I'm part of the committee with Mortgage Professionals Canada, and what we do is once, twice, or even three times a year. Now we're doing it by Zoom, obviously, but we used to visit Parliament Hill and meet with MPs, and then we'd go to Provincial Park as well, Queen's Park in Toronto, and meet with the provincial ones as well. And for us, our message has always been, young Canadians aspire to be homeowners. Let's make sure that we do not stop them from at least having a goal of achieving homeownership if they do the right thing, if they get their careers going. They've got good credit and they can save a down payment. We need to give them the opportunity to be able to be homeowners. And you know, as prices have gone up and the stress test has gone up, and those are federal mandates. And obviously the price have gone up just because of, and honestly, I still believe that it's supply and demand. There's not enough supply out there. So that's why we'll see these spikes. And if we can somehow fix that and maybe get a 30-year amortization in place for first-time home buyers, maybe get the first-time home buyer incentive program tweaked a little bit where the government does not have any equity in the property, and young Canadians are able to do an interest-free loan that they can pay back once they sell their property, then I think that those would be nice steps in helping young Canadians get into home ownership.
See, people are living longer and longer these days. What's wrong with a 30, 35, even a 40-year amortization? I don't understand. You're still paying it back, and you'll probably sell your property before that 40 years anyway and move up.
The only thing they're trying to prevent, I think, is what happened in the States, which we saw in 2006, 2007, 2008, where Americans were using their houses as ATM. So as the values were going up, the house became their ATM. And in the U.S., of course, back then, they were lending 110% of the value of the home. It got crazy. We never did that in Canada. Somehow we always got compared to it, but we never did that here. So our lending practices have always been prudent. They've been even stricter now. But look at everything we've just gone through over the last 18 months, and delinquencies are actually down at major financial institutions when it comes to mortgages. Down. Here we've gone through a period where we've gone through a pandemic. Thousands of people have lost their jobs and aren't working, and yet delinquencies have not budged. If anything, they've come down. So that says a lot about the way our practices are. And they can take credit for the fact that but at some point you need to loosen up. You need to at least open the doors for whether it's young Canadians, even middle-aged Canadians that might have been renting for 10 or 15 years, and now they've hit the pinnacle of their career, and they're they've started a family and they want to own a home. I think you need to open those doors for them to be able to achieve that.
Yeah, but keep in mind, Frank, when we talk about the job losses and that, a lot of the job losses were in the service industry, right? And a lot of service industries are renters. So there wasn't a lot of major job losses, I don't think.
Not all of them, though.
No, I know not all of them. But you know what's really, really concerning right now? Is I went out to dinner. I've gone out to dinner twice, probably in the last week. And every restaurant is so short-staffed because nobody wants to work now because they make more money on CERB and unemployment than they can actually working. And the waitress actually came over to me and she's like, really sorry for the wait. It's frustrating, I know. We just were down so many servers. Wow. And it's frustrating. If anyone wants a job right now, it's simple to find a job right now. There's so many jobs out there.
I haven't heard much talk about that in the election, though. Have you guys?
No.
No. No, some of them, it's a slippery slope, right? Because I don't see one party wanting to take away. I mean, they want those votes. So they're not going to say that they're going to take it away from people that are getting it right now. So it's a slippery slope, but I think it has created some problems where because you're compensating those individuals that used to work in the service industry and they're being compensated as well as if they were working, there's no motivation for them to go back to work. So at some point, you know, and again, as long as the openings are there, it's great. But if those openings disappear and those people are still on that program and all of a sudden now the program stops and now the restaurants are fully staffed, now they're in trouble. So now it's another issue in itself. So,
hey, here's one you're going to like, Paul. From the Conservatives, they want to extend the ability to defer your capital gains tax when you're selling a rental property so you can reinvest it in more rentals.
Wow, that's a good one.
Yeah, I figured you'd like that one.
Defer, but what it gives is define defer. Defer until when?
Well, it doesn't say till when, but I guess if you reinvest it, I mean, you won't have to pay tax on that money at that time at least. So
Forward thinking is what that is. That is forward thinking. Yes. Again, looking at, you know, putting that money to work and potentially creating more jobs, more revenue, more tax revenue. I don't think we see enough forward thinking from our politicians these days.
100% agree.
You have to on many facets, and that's one of them.
Yeah, I agree with Frank on that. That's great. I mean, it's growth, right? It's building. It's I would love to see that.
Yeah,
that was conservative.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Am I helping you make up your mind for Monday?
Steve, I made up my mind a long time ago.
Steve and I have voted already, so we're good. We don't have to, you know, we encourage people to go out there and vote. Let your voice be heard and whatever you want to do.
It's funny, Frank? It's funny because I always thought only old people went out to the early polling, but I guess that's not true, right, Frank?
But clearly not, right? So my wife and I went. So, no, you know what? I think everybody has a voice. And listen, whoever, whichever party you vote for, it's your right. I mean, just know who you're voting for and what they're going to do for you. And that's what you need to do to make your decision. I mean, we're on a real estate and mortgage show. So for us, you know, we see what everybody's offering. And that's one thing. And they're all, listen, they all have good points and they all have bad points. I mean, the negatives for the liberals for us that we talk about all the time is the blind bidding and obviously taxing your property. And I think that those are big negatives for us. But at the end of the day, I mean, everybody can make their own choice who they want to vote for. But again, I mean, let's hold their feet to the fire. If we're going to vote for a certain party and they've made these promises, our job then is to make sure that we were extremely vocal if they do not follow through with the promises that they made and the reason that we voted for them, which as Canadians, we tend to just sit back and not do anything about it.
Well, one thing's for sure, it doesn't look like there's going to be any foreign investment for the next 2 years in residential housing.
May not be a bad thing. Again, I mean, for some people, they might say maybe it's wrong. But at the end of the day, if we've got a shortage of supply, we have to look out for our own, I think, first. And if we can get the supply up and if we can get homes built, then maybe that door reopens again. But as that door reopens, that's when you're going to see prices potentially spike as well. So, right, Paul?
I do like that all platforms are talking about we do have a supply issue and how do we fix that supply issue. So I do like that they're all on the same page with that because we do have a supply issue and it's we need to. I think one of the biggest thing is the constraints they put on new home builders right now. There's way too much money, way too much taxes, way too much. I mean, what was it that article that came out a few years ago that a builder has about a quarter of the price of the home that goes into costs and levies and fees and
permits. Before they even put a shovel in the ground.
The quarter of the builder's costs are just like things like permits and all that kind of stuff. And that's why we have a shortage of supply. There's a lot of builders that aren't building as quick, not as much because it's too expensive to build. So I think if they can take some of the constraints off the builders, it would be really nice because we need to get more shovels in the ground for sure.
So how much impact does 1.4 million homes in 4 years or a million homes in 3 years have?
Is that all Canada though, right?
That's all Canada, yeah.
It's still a lot though.
I mean, right now I think we're doing about a 250,000 across the country. So now they're talking
about...
That's
a big jump.
But that's
a big jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big jump.
Depends where, right? Yeah. It depends where.
That would turn that 200,000 into about 600,000, right?
Right. And it depends on where. I mean, which centers need the homes? I mean, you know, I think Toronto's still growing, obviously the greater Vancouver area. But again, I mean, are you helping first-time home buyers by building in those sectors? I don't know. I mean, are you making the rich richer? Or are you trying to help middle-income family and first-time home buyers? That's what they need to figure out, I think. And for me, anyway, I'd like to think that right now the assistance should go to first-time home buyers, and if you're going to build these homes, maybe mandate that they're owner-occupied so that you don't have, again, investors buying them all. And maybe that's a way to kind of get people on board as to what you're doing and why you're doing it.
But you do have to build investment properties too, Frank, because you got to think. I mean, there's not everyone can afford today's prices. So the rental market is, I mean, although the rental market right now was shocking, actually, there's 700 rentals on the market right now for rent. Like, I was like, whoa, that's a lot.
And that's just on the real estate board, right? Because you know that a lot of people rent their own homes without using a real estate agent. So
the majority of the people go to Kijiji before they go to a real estate agent to rent out their home. So you got to think, if there's 700 rentals on the market right now in Ottawa on the real estate board, I would think there's got to be, I'm guessing when I say this, but there's got to be 1,000 on Kijiji.
Weren't rentals high last year at this time too, Paul?
Yeah, you know what's funny is our market has gone through, at one point, I always track the Orleans, Barrhaven, Kanata area because that's where a majority of the sales happen. At one point, we almost had as many rentals on the market as we did homes for sale. And then it flip-flopped and we had way more homes for sale on the market than we had rentals. Now the rentals have come up again. The properties for sale have gone down a little bit. So we're, you know, there's 164 rentals in those three areas and 244 homes for sale. So it's, I mean, I know it's not the same, but it's closer than it's ever been. So, and if, you know what, we might be talking in a month from now, we might be talking about, 80 rentals instead of 164. It's just, it's hard to predict where this market is going.
Boy, you got to keep an eye on it every single day.
You have to keep an eye on it every single day.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
we return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
We are back. What do you guys think of the $40,000 in a tax-free home savings account for people under 40 if you're buying your first home?
Good idea, but I don't know that you need to put the under 40 part in there. I mean, there's some middle-aged Canadians that haven't been able to save for home ownership.
And, I agree.
Maybe they've gone through health issues, job issues, marital issues, anything, and they just haven't been able to do it. So why do we have to tell a 45-year-old that unfortunately they don't qualify for it because they've never owned a home? Why not motivate them to do it and be able to buy a home, even if it's at the later age of 45 or 50?
Yeah, make it all for first-time homebuyers, right?
Love it. Love the idea. Just don't put limits on it. Just let it happen.
First-time homebuyers tax credit right now is $5,000. Liberals want to make it $10,000. Is that going to make any difference?
Not going to hurt.
Anything helps. Yeah, it's not hurting.
Yeah.
I hope that whoever gets in takes the best of all of these ideas and implements them.
Here's hoping. I mean, that's as a voter, as a Canadian, that's what you hope for, is the government, looks at all of these and says, we can make all of these happen. And, some of them maybe not, but we can make most of them happen. But again, I mean, their egos get in the way and they say, we're not going to do that because the other party came up with it. And we don't need to hear them say that you're only doing it because we came up with it. So they say no, even though it's a great idea. But because it hurts their own personal egos, they don't do it, which I think is unfortunate.
I do agree with you, though, Steve. Wouldn't it be nice if whoever got into power cherry-picked the best of all the ideas and just went with all those ideas? Because I guarantee most of the parties are probably looking at the other party's platform saying, well, sure. That's a really good one. Why didn't we think of that one? So,
sure.
But you're right. Frank's right. It's an ego thing, right? It's like, I didn't think of that one, so I'm not going to give the credit to my political ally.
And if you look at some of the highlights, the 30-year amortization is one of them. Making it easier for people to get 7- and 10-year mortgages and reducing the stress test is another good one, right, Frank?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you make 7- and 10-year mortgages better unless you talk to financial institutions and tell them to take a haircut. I mean, the problem right now is that 7- and 10-year mortgages are way more expensive than a 5-year mortgage, so it doesn't make any financial sense to lock in for 7 or 10 years. But what they should do, what I would love to see, is if you choose a 7- or 10-year term, and I still believe if you chose a 5-year term, you should be able to qualify at the contract rate that you got. Anything less than 5 years or a variable, you got to qualify at 5.25. But if you're going to take a 5, 7, or 10-year mortgage, then qualify at the contract rate. Because realistically, for rates to go up by then, if rates have gone up, now all of a sudden you've built up a lot of equity in your property, your income has likely gone up, and you're in much better financial shape to be able to keep the home, which is what their concern is.
What is it? What's a 10 at right now, Frank?
You're in the threes, low threes.
And you're
very high twos.
199 for a 5 now?
Yeah, well, high ratio, 179 on a high ratio. Now the rates have come down a little bit this week. And on a 30-year amortization, you're in the very low twos, 214, 219. So, again, to take a 10-year at 3.19, which most of them that I see, that's what they have, that's 1% more you're paying every year for the next 5 years. And you don't even know where rates are going to be 5 years from now. So I think that that's throwing money away.
So if those rates stayed the same, but they lowered the qualifications for the stress test, if you got a 7 or 10, would that bring in more first-time homebuyers or not make much of a difference?
Well, it might, because right now they can't qualify at 5.25, but if they qualify at 3.19 and they're forced to have to take a 10-year mortgage, then at least they get into home ownership and they're able to qualify to get into home ownership. So that's the reason that I would say would make sense. But again, you got to make that 10-year mortgage rate reasonable and at least a little motivation. And maybe there's a tax credit back to the bank so that they can lower the rate. I mean, I don't know. Come up with something that's creative, but again, allows for young Canadians to have some hope.
If I had talked to Frank 20 years ago and said 3% for 10 years, you would have said, that's a home run.
Yeah, never. Never going to happen, right? I mean, it's no different than what Paul says all the time. You never would have imagined that homes would have gone up in the last 2 years what they did. There's no way. Paul would have bet me everything he had 2 years ago if I said a townhouse today would be going at 600, 700. Everything he had, he would have bet me, right, Paul?
Oh, absolutely. But I don't have a lot because I bought you so many breakfasts. So I don't really have a lot.
I would have just settled for breakfast. So
you know what's funny, though? You know what's funny? We're September now. So 8 months ago, start of the year, our average sale price was at $529,000. And today, we're at 650,000 is our average sale price. So I would never, ever have thought, if you guys would have told me that our average sale price was going to be up, you know, that high over.
It's like 150 grand in a year. Eight months.
Yeah. And it's flat over the last 3 months. If anything, it's come down over the last 3 months.
So. It's come down $9,000 over the last 2 months. It's come down. Right. So, I mean, if we would have kept on that trajectory, we would be up about $200,000 right now. So still, when we're going to meet with sellers and they're, you know, a little bit, you know, not happy with the situation, but they've kind of missed that really crazy market. I always say to them, guys, the average sale price is up 150 grand in the last 8 months. So, you know, yeah, you're maybe not selling for quite as much as you would have in March and April, but at the same time, that appreciation has already gone up way, way more than you'd ever thought that would have went up. So,
yeah, the biggest change would be losing out on multiple offers right now.
Yeah, losing out on multiple offers. Because what happens in a multiple offer? People bid too much. I mean, let's be honest. We've seen people who've paid a premium for property this year. And, you know, I even think people who bought in Jan, Feb, March, April, May might be kicking themselves a little bit. But don't panic because our market's still going up. So yeah. Don't panic.
If only there was blind bidding.
Yeah.
Hey, that's going to change. If that changes, if they refuse to allow blind bidding anymore, that's going to change who you get as a real estate agent. You better get a very good real estate agent.
Better get a very, very good real estate agent to help you in that circumstance for sure. But you know what? I would hope that that does not come in. I think that would hurt. You know, it takes away choice, and you're taking away a consumer's choice to do what they want to do and sell their house the way they want to sell their house. And that's one that I completely disagree with, as well as the one we've talked about with flipping tax. I completely disagree with that one as well. So,
well, I guess we'll find out early this week, depending on mail-in ballots. We may not know on Monday, but we should know by Tuesday, Wednesday at the latest. So yeah. It's going to be an interesting
week. Definitely by our next show, we'll know.
We should know pretty close on Monday, though, I believe.
Yeah. Again, it depends on turnout and how many mail-in ballots there are, right?
Yeah, but I do recommend people get out there and vote. No matter which party you're voting for, get out and make your voice heard.
Yeah, absolutely. Birthdays, Frank?
Brent Babcock, our commercial guy, which I hope to have on the show one day. His birthday, celebrating his birthday this week. He does all commercial financing. He's our go-to guy, so happy birthday to Brent. And big thank you to my good friend Mike Waldo DiPaolo from Navarra Homes, who I'm going through a little bit of renovation. And no, I'm not adding a third kitchen, Paul. We're going through renovation. We're getting rid of the shag rug, I think. But
The best part of Frank's renovation, Paul, he doesn't have to cover the couches. They're already in plastic.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah.
So thank you to Mike and Navarra Homes for everything he's doing for me.
I have two birthdays. I have James Daly from my team, rockstar real estate agent. So James' birthday is today, actually. And Kathleen, who's our director of first impressions front desk, her birthday is this week as well. So happy birthday, Kathleen.
Director of first impressions. Now there's a gig you'd never succeed at, Paul. Have a great week, gentlemen.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Go out and vote and please support local businesses and charities.
Yeah, absolutely.